Happy New Year and welcome to Populist. It's episode 29, episode starting off 2022 here. And with me, as always, is the Marco Polo to my Ferdinand Magellan. It's Kirk Trutner. How you doing, Kirk?
Let's hit the spice trail.
Yeah. Bring back some noodles, baby.
Well, how you doing, everybody? Welcome to episode 29. Today, Steve and I are going to discuss our top 10 bucket list destinations. I don't know about you, but this gave me a complete and total sense of wanderlust, looking at all these various destinations and just going, I'm going to go there next. I'm going to go there next. I'm going to go there next. So much so, I'm going to have to win the lottery because there's a lot of places I want to go visit now.
Tell me about it. It's we kind of jokingly between you and I call this our annual travel episode because we did one last year for Best American Cities. But yeah, that's, if we did more, I'd be having a problem because I'm already starting to like jot down notes and go, yeah, I should prioritize this in my life a little more. I should maybe do this. And because Sean and I are planning on going to Europe. So I was like, okay, I'll steer this way first. Now it's a problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, it was a wonderful feast to go through and rediscover some things, discover other things. I did a lot of, I didn't know that as I was doing research on some of these areas. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you come up with, what I come up with. I honestly think this is going to be our most subjective list to date because there's so many great options, and it just depends on how you weight it.
Yeah, and I think it kind of became a self-fulfilling prophecy that it was going to be subjective. I was, you know, first approaching it saying, what would I recommend to somebody of something that they must see? It's like, well, you know what? I haven't been to most of these places on my list anyway, so I'm going to skew it a little more to what do I really want to see, you know? So I kind of went with a blend of culture and history along with, you know, some natural wonders and things that just you plain just don't see very much in your average, you know, daily life. It's what do I want to see and experience that would make a profound difference in my life? And that's kind of what I went with.
I pulled up a quote from Terry Dale, who's the president and the CEO of the United States Tour Operators Association. And he said, quote, the definition of a travel bucket list has evolved from a checklist of places to see into journeys that are life embracing and even transformative. It's more than checking a box. Bucket list travel experiences make people fall in love with the destination and yearn to come back again and again to discover more. And I think that's a nice way of saying it. I think not everything has to be life embracing or transformative, but I think people are looking for not just a destination, but something to do with that destination as well. How can you get the best of both worlds there?
Mm-hmm. It's a good quote, and I think I wholeheartedly agree with that. So yeah, it'll be very interesting. I will say that there is at least two things on my list that I had no pre-recollection or pre-cognition that it was going to be on there. Surprised me, but then it just hit me. And one of them, I didn't find in any book or anything. It just dawned on me going, yeah, yeah. So
yeah. This is going to be another episode where I think we both, at least a couple times, going, oh my God, that's a great answer. I wish I'd thought of that.
Well, I doubt that I'll think that of you because I just normally don't think of that about you to start with. So don't be
You offended. Will be surprised, Mr. Bond.
I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will.
The over-under.
All right. So taking that into consideration, let me set the over-under for this week since you're going to go first. And as we talked just before the show, I was going round and round and round about this. I'm going to set the common answers, the ones that we just repeat, at 4.5.
Under.
Okay. Interesting. You're probably right. And then the exacts, I can't bring myself just to do 0.5, so I'm going to go with 1.5.
Under.
Oh,
under. Wow. Under.
All right. He's under on both.
Under on both.
You are a brave, brave soul. All right. But before we get into...
I just think this is going to be a really great episode of variety. You know, in the past, we've crossed paths a lot, you know, and the topics have led to that. I think this one's going to be a really fertile conversation. I think a lot of good stuff's going to come out of it. So I'm anxious to get started.
Yeah, me too. But before we do that, let's start with our unlisted segment.
Unlisted.
These are things that you won't be hearing on our list. And for me, not listed on my list today will be Pompeii, the famous city that was demolished by Mount Vesuvius, Petra in Jordan, and the Panama Canal. It's going with the letter P today, brought to you by the letter P.
Excuse me, I have to hit the head. for me, my unlisted, I will not be discussing running with the bulls in Pamplona. To me, that's just lunacy. I'm not going to be listing Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a giant croquet court to me. And I will not be talking about visiting the lush rolling hills of the Shire or the Lord of the Rings sets at Hobbiton in New Zealand.
Stonehenge also, we don't need to see it. We saw the movie, this is Spinal Tap. So we've seen Stonehenge.
Kind of. Exactly. I just can't, and I'm sure I'm wrong. And I'm just going to preface it with a lot of the assumptions I'm making here are probably wrong because I don't have experience in a lot of the locations I'm talking about. But I just can't shake the feeling that you go to Stonehenge, you stand there for 30 seconds and go, okay, what's next?
I think you want to go up and touch one of the stones and you say, okay, cool, I made contact. And
Or like try and push one over, you know, something.
Right. Well, that's, you know, let's talk about that as we open up our discussion here. You know, there's going for things that are kind of categorized in the world of historical significance, you know, so things like Stonehenge, Easter Island, Egypt, Machu Picchu, Greece, Rome, you know, things that are old and have this tangible part of history, and things that are old still exist. And so you can make that connection there. Did you go that route at all with anything or did anything come close? Because, I mean, I have respect for all of those things, but, you know, I'll say right now that there's a couple things related to those on my list.
Oh, yeah. I think it's an element practically in almost every, not every, but almost every choice that I've got, you know, and that was a big part of the criteria was not only is it a, as I mentioned, a wonderful destination, are there things to do there? But what's the variety? Are there museums? Is there architecture? What's the cuisine like? Mm-hmm. You know, is there a social scene? Are there districts you need to visit? You know, famous landmarks you need to see. Yeah, I think those all come into balance in certain things. And when you start talking about European cities, those are obviously going to weigh a lot more than something like Chicago, which is a great town. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, Chicago doesn't have, you know, 500-year-old architecture or 700-year-old pieces of art in museums and or it may, you know, I don't know what Chicago has museum wise, but you get the idea that the European capitals and cities have a much, you know, longer lead time than we have in the United States.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I was always struck by that when the first time I went to Washington, D.C., and I go, wow, this is some of the, you know, Northern Virginia and everything. It's some of the older stuff in the United States, and it doesn't even come close to what a lot of the rest of the world is. You know, right. Even in the Southern Hemisphere, like, you know, Mexico has things way older than we do as far as our big physical structures. That's just because the indigenous people of North America, they made temporary structures. They were moving around a lot. Then, you know, they weren't building these big permanent things to last the test of time as the Romans were and the Greeks were and the Peloponnesians and all these ancient civilizations.
But I will say that I think, you know, when you bring up Washington, which I think is a great call, it's not on my list, but for some of the reasons you mentioned. But on the other hand, I think Washington, D.C. tells the story of the United States. Mm-hmm. Better than most countries tell their stories. And it's unbelievably impressive to see. It's organized well. It's the great social experiment, democracy, and everything that has gone into it and everything that has affected it. I think that story is incredibly well told and is available for you to see in Washington, probably better than most, like say, European capitals.
Yeah. A little spoiler here. There's three or four American things that came close to being on my list, but I actually have no American things on my list, believe it or not.
I only have one.
Yeah, it came to the point where it was either, yeah, they're great and everything, but either I've seen it already, you know, or it was that age thing saying maybe there's a better example of something similar somewhere else in the world, or something that's just more impressive because of its historical significance somewhere else in the world. So I always seem to, you know, get blocked as far as trying to get something American onto the list.
Yeah, and I'll also say, you know, most of mine, if not all of mine, is centered in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Europe, Africa, you know, but the Far East is not one I really went to, or Russia or Asia. Yeah, I really didn't. Mm-hmm. I really didn't have too many draws. And again, that's where I think the subjectivity comes in. I think that European capitals, just for my own personal taste, are more intriguing and interesting than Asian capitals. Now, yes. Again, I could be completely wrong, and please send your cards and letters to me. Tell me why, because I want to be educated. But from what I know, and I don't think I'm, you know, completely uneducated, the European and South American and African feel is just a better one for me.
Yeah, but when you look at the European equation, it really fits in the aspect that it's really the seat of Western civilization, of our culture, of industry, of arts, cuisine, you know, how things are done, language, science. And so you look at the big bastions of London and Paris and Rome and, you know, Berlin and, you know, all these Madrid, these things there.
Vienna.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They are rich and so rich in history and so important to things that came from them. They begat this, which begat that, and so forth. So you can't really ignore it. Now, Moscow didn't make my list, but I will tell you, I've always, since I've been a young teenager, been intrigued to go see Moscow. And I think a lot of it comes from, you know, they've always been painted as the enemy of the United States and everything. And I'm definitely a firm believer that you should always learn about the other side, about their culture, whatever, what makes them tick. And, you know, I suspect that once you talk to the people and go amongst the people themselves are going to be fantastic and a lot like us and so forth. But it's the mysterious part of Moscow, Red Square and this and this and this that, you know, you want to see. And it's a place like no other.
It's so funny you say that because Jill and I have a neighbor who is from Russia, was born and raised in Russia and is now here in the United States. She's a musician. Mm-hmm. And not this Christmas, but last Christmas, we were down at her place and she wanted to show us a video on YouTube of what her country looked like in the holidays. I'm like, okay, you know, it should be interesting. And it was a handheld camera that just slowly walked through, you know, various districts of Moscow. And the whole place looked like the Americana or the Grove, which are two shopping areas here in LA. They had decorations up. They had trees up. People were dressed in nice, you know, winter clothing. And I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't what I've been taught or been told all of these years. And then as you wander around, you come around one corner and boom, there's the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I never would have put that together. I pictured the Kremlin in this, you know, kind of like the White House and then nothing around it for, you know, however much, just for security purposes. And this really was just right in the middle of a downtown area.
Yeah.
You know, obviously secured, but there was just a ton of commerce and shop. I mean, I think we saw like a Jamba Juice, you know, location in one of these shops and, you know, other American and, you know, English brands. And it was just, it was a really interesting education because I just pictured it as this dark, dank, you know, people are lining up for their loaves of bread for their Christmas present kind of thing. And it was the farthest thing from it. And it was really great to see. It really was.
And the Kremlin, you can roll right into that baby. As long as you've got a really good mask making, you know, set up. I've seen Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. He just walks right in that puppy. It's easy. You can just do it. So if you go to Moscow, just go waltz it in the Kremlin. They want you to do it. They like it.
Let us know how it goes. You can send us a note.
Did you consider any, like what I call engineering marvels? You know, you just, I think, kind of hinted that maybe the Great Wall of China wasn't on your list. But, you know, there's things like that and the Eiffel Tower, our Golden Gate Bridge, skyscrapers in general. You know, there's all sorts of things around the world which are really spectacular. Any of those get consideration?
They got consideration, absolutely. But more as another element, like we talked about the history and the architecture, you know, if there was a unique engineering marvel there as well, that added to the value of what I was choosing. But it wasn't something where I said, ooh, you got to go see the Golden Gate Bridge. Ooh, you got to go see the Empire State Building. Ooh, you got to go see the Colosseum right. in Rome. It's not so much right. about that. There's got to be more to it. I mean, this is a bucket list destination. If you're going, it could be, you know, the last dollars you ever spend to go. This could be the last trip you ever take. You got to make it a good one. So it had to have more than just that for me. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that there aren't some on the list, but it had to have more than that for me.
Right. Some of the engineering marvels that I was describing fell into the city of what they're part of or the area of what they're part of, you know, that did then indeed get onto my list. So as a singular thing of the reason to go, no, but as part of the greater overall destination, yes. I think the singular things that tended to draw me more just for what they are the natural wonders, those type of things.
Yes, I agree.
And I have at least, I got like almost like four.
Don't give it away.
I almost got like four natural wonders on mine. Almost. Two of them are
almost.
Two of them are a little hard to describe. One's kind of like a event, and the other one is I don't know, but we'll get there. What about you with natural wonders?
So, what was more important for you, the destination, or something to do with the destination?
Well, I think it kind of goes hand in hand with me. It's the destination is, like I said, is it a little life changing, and for me. Life-changing is not just going to someplace and going, oh, wow, look, I've seen this now. It's the culture. It's the, as you mentioned, the cuisine, the arts, the overall energy and pulse and the vibe of the place. And what does it mean in a historical sense? So I think it's all of that. It's that tactile connection to any of those.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, the example I'll give, this is not on my list, but I'll give it Mount Kilimanjaro. Mm-hmm. You could say that's a great destination, but I think climbing Mount Kilimanjaro is the attractive thing, not just going to the mount, but climbing it.
I think being carried by somebody up the mountain and I could just hang out and have a beer and check out the view. That's the reason to go.
Okay. You say tomato, I say tomato.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, boys and girls, Mount Everest, nowhere close to my list. The thought of putting my life on the line to go up there with thousands of other people and unscrupulous tour companies. There was an article that Smithsonian or National Geographic or somebody just posted last year, I think it was. And there was this one particular day last year where all these tour groups from Tibet and China and Australia and the UK, they were all trying to get into this window of good weather to go up there. And they had like 17 deaths or something that day because it was such a cluster F. So like, no, count me out of that one. I'm happy to look at the video. Well,
all I will say to that is my unders are looking very strong.
All right. But I need to see you and your little pitons and your oxygen canisters and all that. No, thank you.
Remember, I am an Howard Bound graduate. Yeah. It was 40 years ago, but I'm an Howard Bound graduate.
Thank you. And I don't remember you showing me on your achievements list for that particular program, climbing Mount Everest. So we'll see.
Well, with all this, I think we should get started. I think we're going to have some really good conversation around our individual pieces. So who goes first this week?
You do, my friend, Marco Polo. You do. I went first last time for the animation, so you get the honors now. So let's do our 10 through 5s, starting with you.
10 through 5. I'm going to get it out of the way very early and take a cheat on my number 10. And number 10 is taking a road trip on Route 66, America's Main Street here in the United States. It is a time capsule of America. In this particular case, this is not about the destination. It is about the journey. It is natural scenic beauty. Route 66 has got almost everything you'd want. The Grand Canyon, Santa Monica Pier, ghost towns, prisoner of war camps, oldest church in America, Civil War battlefields, and you can stand on a corner in Winslow, Arizona. Number 10 for me is a trip down Route 66. Number 9 can also be considered a bit of a cheat, but I'm going to go with it. And that is...
Oh, I think there's going to be lots of cheats.
Wherever you are from, do some research. Find out where your family comes from. Not a generation back, but 4 or 5 generations back. And then go to that location. Go do some research into the town that you came from, the country that you and your family came from. Do some research. Go visit some areas. I will talk about another trip in just a minute where my family went to a country, and we actually went to an area that had a museum to our clan, our family clan in Scotland. So, and it was fascinating. It filled in so many blanks that our family tried to you know, have information on, but it was just terrific. So I would say go discover where you're from. Number 8, I would go on an African photographic safari in Kenya. It is nature at its most real. You know, if you think about it, if you're in the car, the animals are coming to see you at the zoo. You're getting to see them in their complete and total natural habitat. There are different kinds of safaris, the migration safari, where over 1 million wildebeest and thousands of gazelles and zebras migrate back and forth. There's the big 5 safaris, lion, leopard, buffalo, rhino, and elephant. You've got the beautiful skies at night, luxury accommodations if you choose the right safari company. So I would do an African photographic safari in Kenya. Number 7, Antarctica. I mean, if you're going to get all 7 continents in, you're going to want to cross off Antarctica on your bucket list. Several cruise lines offer trips there. They include wonderful cuisine, wonderful accommodations, a lot of educational opportunities as you're getting to Antarctica on weather effects, the world-class wildlife, glaciers, icebergs. It is the true last great untouched wilderness. And when you're there, you don't think of it, but there are some remarkable things to do there, whether it's camping on the ice, whether it's kayaking around the icebergs. Some people take the polar bear plunge into sub-freezing water. You can scuba dive, cross-country ski, mountaineering, lots of things to do in Antarctica. Number 6, and this is the only
one. They cannot call it the polar bear plunge. There are no polar bears in Antarctica.
No, but it is what polar bears do, and you're just doing it in Antarctica. Judges agree.
Why don't you call it the stupid human plunge?
Well, you know, one of the interesting things I was reading about is the penguins in Antarctica are unbelievably friendly because they have no natural predators there. To your point, there's no bears there. So they just will wander up and see how you're doing, and you get to, you know, hang out with the penguin. I just think that's cool. Anyway, Antarctica is number 7. Number 6 is the only one on my list that I've actually done, and that is a long golf trip to Scotland. If you are a golfer, there is no better way you can pay your respects to the great game of golf than going to Scotland and playing courses like St. Andrew's Old, St. Andrew's New, King's Barnes, Carnoustie, Royal Dornoch, Troon, the list goes on and on. This is something I did with my dad, my uncle, my twin cousins about 10 years ago, and it was a most remarkable trip. And it's not just the golf. Again, we found our way to the Cameron Clan Museum. We stayed some time in Edinburgh and looked at the museums and churches there. St. Andrews is a university town. So there's a lot of quality experiences there other than the golf, but the golf is just sublime. So if you are a golfer, this is something you need to do. That is a golf trip to Scotland. Number 5, you briefly touched on it, and this is a hike to the Mount Everest base camp in Nepal. I'm not talking about going all the way up the mountain. I'm just talking about going to the base camp, because going up all the way up the mountain, to your point, I think is insanely dangerous. There are unscrupulous companies out there, and now they're trying to force people up the mountain, you know, in an unsafe manner. But the 2-week trip that it takes to get there, you arrive, you acclimatize, you hike from village to village to get to the base camp. It's an experience of all of Nepal, the Buddhist monasteries that are there, the hospitality, the culture along the way. It is supposedly an amazing transformative experience. And the views once you get there, obviously, of the Himalayas and of Everest are just amazing. So trek to Mount Everest Base Camp in Nepal is my number 5. So to review, we've got Road trip on Route 66, discovering where you and your family from at number 9, African photographic safari. And you notice I'm being very particular about photographic safari. Number 7, visiting Antarctica. Number 6, the golf trip to Scotland. And number 5, making your way to the base camp for Mount Everest in Nepal.
Very interesting list. Knowing you, I should have.
How's my over-under looking?
I should have anticipated the golf trip to Scotland. I half thought I might hear something about Route 66. So glad to see you did that. I was saddened though, because I was reading about that as well. And I didn't realize that it's in multiple spots now that you have to make your own little improvisation to get to the next spot of Route 66, that it's not intact anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But still, cool trip. Very nice. Okay, well, mine, 10 through 5, starts with number 10, and it is the same as your number 7. It's Antarctica. And I agree with everything you said. The penguins, just as a correction, they do have natural predators, just not on the ice. Once they get into the water, there's leopard seals, killer whales, and whatnot. So, yeah, they have issues there. But how can you not want to at least...
Well, then the smart ones have learned to stay out of the water.
Well, they got to go eat somehow. There's nothing to eat on the ice, dude.
That's why they're so happy and friendly.
Yeah. But,
hey, Henny, go take a swim.
But just the wildlife, what we talked about, and seeing the glaciers, you potentially could see the South Pole, Blood Falls, kind of an unusual thing to see at, Antarctica, Deception Island, and the Southern Lights. I would love to see the Southern Lights, bigger than the Northern Lights. It's the Southern Lights. Number 9 for me is Egypt. It's the cradle of civilization. Things, the pyramid, Sphinx, the Nile River, the Egyptian Museum, outdoor bazaars, mosques, palaces, the City of the Dead, Valley of the Kings, Luxor Temple, all these things just scream of ancient history, the beginning of civilization, and sign me up for that. Number 8, kind of in the same vein, but also just it's gosh darn beautiful and fantastic, and that's Greece. And not just Athens. We're talking about, you know, all the different islands. Of course, there's the Acropolis and Delphi and ancient Olympia, but the beautiful islands, beaches, and waters, you know, such as Santorini and Mykonos and olive and orange tree groves all over Mount Olympus itself. I think it's a big time destination. Number 7 is another one of the natural wonders, and that's the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. I love to snorkel. I'm pretty water oriented, and this is the world's largest coral reef system with over 2,900 individual reefs, 900 islands stretching out over 1,400 miles. There's over 1,500 different fish species, sea turtles, sharks, whales, seabirds. It's an amazing sight for the aquatic animal lover. Number 6 is a little bit of a cheat for me. It's what I call the Tokyo-Kyoto corridor in Japan. You have Tokyo as one of the most electric, vibrant, modern cities, but it's just a bullet train ride away from the traditional emperor's palace and capital of Kyoto, with its old palaces, its Zen gardens, cherry trees, Buddhist shrines. It's like really going back in time and just gorgeous. And then number 5 for me is a little like your number 8, but I called it the Serengeti migration in Africa. It's a little bit of what you're talking about, but it's a specific event. Also, it's the largest animal migration on the planet. And it starts in, Tanzania, goes past Lake Victoria and ends up in Kenya.
Yeah.
And so whether you see it on land with a land safari or by via air, there are no bad seats in this house. And it's something to behold, herd animals, predators. It's all happening there with the Serengeti migration. So once again, to summarize, number 10 was the very cold and frigid Antarctica. Number 9 was the cradle of civilization, Egypt. Number 8 was Greece. Number 7 was the snorkeler's paradise, the Great Barrier Reef. Number 6 was the Tokyo-Kyoto corridor in Japan. And number 5 was the massive migration of the Serengeti Plains in Africa.
Nice. Yeah, that's exactly the one I was talking about with the safari that I was listening, that particular migration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to your point, the largest migration of its kind, and it happens, you know, twice a year. So there's opportunities to see, you know, moving one direction, moving the other, and just how that all comes together. And I love the idea of seeing it from the air too, because that would just give you a great sense of scope and how this all plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're going into the rainy seasons from the air, supposedly it's spectacular, as you can literally see parts of the savanna growing with little water lakes and things growing green. And it's supposed to be pretty, pretty spectacular. All right. Well, let's get into
Mount Rushmore.
Our Mount Rushmore, our final four, the big four, the ones that mean the most to us. So let's start off with you, Kirk. What is your
number four?
My number four, I think, is the only one on my list that's like your 8 through 10, which are locations. But my number four is the City of Lights. It's Paris. It is, by all accounts, and I think most people and travel experts and such would agree, the most beautiful city in the world. It is the City of Light, the City of Love. In his memoir, A Movable Feast, Ernest Hemingway called Paris a city of many splendors. It's an incredible city. I have not been since I was 4 years old, but I still have just these wonderful memories of being in Paris. The monumental squares, the churches, the famous boulevards, the Seine River that rambles through the city, the romantic bridges that cross it. It's wonderful. There's the Musée d'Orsay. There's the Champs-Élysées. I'm going to mess these names up, I promise. Versailles. There's Versailles. There's Eiffel Tower. Obviously, you know, you can see the Mona Lisa or retrace Robert Langdon's footsteps at the Louvre. There's all the cafes along the banks. It is just a romantic, wonderful city. When anybody ever talks about, you know, rekindling their relationships or their 25th anniversary, it's always, let's go to Paris. Let's go to this wonderfully romantic city. It's beautiful. It is in the heart of Europe. So there's lots of little destinations you can hit outside of Paris, especially in France. So my number four is visiting the City of Lights, Paris.
Great choice. Beautiful city. Hope to be there really, really soon. Really soon. My number four, I'm going to take a bullet train and go through the channel to the City of London, England, for my number four. One of the oldest cities in Europe, the land of Shakespeare, Dickens, Tolkien, and H.G. Wells. It's the city that's been described in tales of Sherlock Holmes, Oliver Twist, and even parts of Harry Potter for the modern reader. So much history, so much influence on the Western world and its culture. You got Big Ben and Parliament, Buckingham Palace, Westminster Abbey and Palace, the Thames River, the Tower of London, the Royal Observatory in Greenwich. Yes, that's where they set, that's where time, our day, and how the hours break down. That's where it starts, the Royal Observatory in Greenwich. King's College, Trafalgar Square, Wembley Stadium, Royal Albert Hall, Hyde Park, the British Museum, the West End of theaters. There's so much to see and do, and there's iconic things, the red telephone booths, the double-decker buses, the old Globe Theater. It's, you can spend weeks upon weeks upon weeks in this city and not see it all. But the importance of what it has contributed to, especially Western culture, is undeniable. There's great events like the changing of the guard, the Queen's birthday events, the state opening of Parliament, the Pearly Kings and Queens Festival. A lot of life, a lot of fun, a lot of culture. That's London.
I don't see how you can go wrong with either one of the choices that we've got. I'll meet you in your town one day, and you can come over and meet me in Paris on another day.
Sounds good.
And you're absolutely right. And I think the other common thing they have is, it's not just the cities themselves. You can get out into the countryside, not too far out into the countryside or too far outside of the city, but there's still just wonderful things to experience there. From London, you can go to Liverpool. From Paris, you can go out to the Bordeaux region. There's lots of things to do, not just in the city, but in and around them as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's move on to number three.
Number three.
Number three to me is one of the most romantical, to make up a word, notions that I can remember in my life. Just the idea of doing this, I think, is just drips in luxury and is just the most decadent thing you can do. And that would be riding the Orient Express.
Nice.
The original route went from 1883 to 1962, only interrupted by World War I and World War II, was Paris, Strasbourg, Munich, Vienna, Budapest, Bucharest, and Istanbul. Now, there is a company now that's operating the Orient. In fact, they even found many of the old rail cars that were used. I'm again going to screw this up, by the Compagnie Internationale des Wagons. They created the original carriages. This company has completely refurbished them, completely sourced the original materials. They've created the longest passenger train in Europe. There's 11 sleeping cars, 3 restaurant cars, 1 bar car. They got that backwards. And 2 staff cars for fine dining, luxurious accommodations, and the unparalleled romance of train travel through these historic European cities. It just seems like it'd be the most wonderful way to see that part of the world. It's a 4-day, 3-night trip, $2,300 a night. So it ain't cheap, but man, I just think it would be the most elegant way to do this. And man, you ever really want to feel upper crust, that's the way to do it. So number 3 for me is riding the Orient Express.
Yeah. I love that one. I lost track of that one. That's pretty good. Good choice. Good choice. My number 3 is your number 4. Ooh. I'm going back across the channel and I'm going to revisit Paris, because yes, London was a great choice for 4, but I like Paris even a little more. Everything you said, it is one of the most influential centers on cuisine and wine, arts and architecture, and it's an amazing blending of the old and new worlds. In Paris, like you mentioned, so much to see: Eiffel Tower, Notre Dame, the Paris Opera House, the Louvre, the Arc de Triomphe, just sidewalk cafes, cheese and wine shops. You can lose yourself for hours and hours and hours and not know the time has gone by. But I'm also including some of the surrounding areas. On the road to Normandy, leaving Paris, you're going to pass by Givenchy, and where there's Monet's home and his famous gardens where he painted a lot of his paintings about. And then in Normandy itself, you've got, of course, the D-Day beaches, the bunkers and memorials, the Abbey du Mont Saint-Michel. It's just a beautiful, beautiful area, beautiful trip, historic trip, very important to Europe and to the world itself. And a couple of what I just said with everything you said, and that is Paris, or Paris through Normandy.
Excellent. So good. You are going to come visit me. So that's the main thing. We're going to connect in Paris.
Yeah,
that works.
And we're going to Normandy, dude.
and then we'll grab the train. Oh my gosh. We need to get somebody to sponsor this podcast so we can actually do this and do a separate thing on here's what we experienced.
Yes.
Can you work on that for me, Steve?
I'll be working on that tomorrow. Go. All right. Ever moving forward, that brings us to numero dos.
Number 2.
All right. My number 2 is very similar to your number 9. I just kind of turned it sideways and had a specific way of doing it. But my number 2 is a cruise down the Nile through Egypt. It was tough. I knew I wanted a river trip on here somewhere. Definitely thought about the Amazon. But when you compare the land and water wildlife and the really unique experience, singular experience of the Amazon versus the ancient history of Egypt, you have to do the Egypt trip. It's the longest river in Africa. Many say it's the longest in the world. It's over 4,000 miles through 11 countries as it flows into the Mediterranean Sea in northern Egypt. But along certain routes, and I'm going to give one example, the Cairo to Aswan cruise, which is 550 miles, it begins in Cairo and makes stops at the pyramids at Giza, the ancient city of Luxor, the temple complex of Dendera, the temple of Horus at Edfu, and the market town of Aswan. I mean, what better way to explore one of the world's oldest and most important civilizations? I love the idea of a hotel that comes along with you. I think that's what a river cruise does. It allows you to have the luxurious accommodations and the meals and some sort of continuity in your trip while experiencing all of these wonderful things. I'm not talking about a Carnival cruise. Been there, done that. Don't ever need to do that again. But these smaller, you know, cruise ships or ships that river ships that do maybe 100 guests and specialize in a little bit more of an upscale experience, I just think that'd be an extraordinary combination of vacation and exploration. And I love doing it in some place that's got the history that Egypt does and on a river so famous and some would say infamous as the Nile. So for me, number two is a cruise down the River Nile.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's probably the way that I would travel Egypt also. And I guess we're going to count that as kind of the same thing because Egypt and a trip down the Nile to see Egypt. Now, be honest here, your overall concept of Egypt and want to go see it, was it shaped more by books or by movies?
Yes. and you know, National Geographics. I've had an interest in Egypt. I love the way that the mythologies have been worked into various TV shows. One of my favorite TV shows is Stargate. And I love what they did with some Egyptian mythology to kind of play around with it a little bit. Obviously, you know, a book like Death on the Nile,
right,
by Agatha Christie, new movie is coming out next month, shaped it, but there's just something romantic. I mean, who doesn't picture Egypt in 1932? Nobody pictures it today. Right. You know, you see these pictures of the pyramids and it's just so beautiful. Then you get another angle and you realize there's like a Carl's Jr. 100 yards away from them. Same thing with Petra, which you mentioned earlier. You know, there's that beautiful shot of it in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. But if you go on Google Earth and do a 360 look around, you realize that there's a Trick the Tourist souvenir stand literally where the camera was
for
Last Crusade.
Right.
So you never picture these places unromantically. You always picture them with nice lighting and at sunset or at dusk, you know, kind of thing. You know, one of the things I read when I was doing the research on Egypt was the best thing to do is watch the sunset from the back of a camel, you know, when you're in Egypt. Like, all right, I'm not going to get that specific, but I get what they're saying. It's all these romantic notions of it. And I don't think any of us picture any of these countries in any other way.
Very well said. Yeah. Indiana Jones had a great influence on a lot of these things, but you know, when you visit Salah and Cairo, you know, that's one look at it. Death on the Nile for sure. The Spy Who Loved Me. We were talking about that not too long ago.
Oh yeah.
Stuff there. It all are good contributing factors to kind of make you want to go for sure. The Ten Commandments, you know, all sorts of stuff. Very, very good.
Take two tablets and call me in the morning.
My number two is probably something that's not on your list, and that's space. It's
nice.
Founded before the dawn of time, also known as outer space, the heavens, the cosmos, or as intrepid explorer James T. Kirk said, the final frontier. It's the largest destination on either of our lists. I'm going to best guess that. It's also the largest vacuum known to man. You know, great views of Earth and the moon.
That doesn't suck.
No. Great views of the Earth and the moon. And every time you visit, it'll be a little different. Something, you know, some little dwarf star or some whatever, you know, it's going to be different. A small handful of companies can get you there. More to come in the future, I'm sure.
More importantly, can they get you back?
Yeah. It's not caught on big yet, so no problem with crowds. It is a little costly. I will have to say that's for sure, but it's space.
You've been working on that one for the last 2 weeks.
No,
haven't you? You just had that patter ready to go. You know, I'm thinking I'm waiting for Greenpeace to sponsor a trip because we've got to pick up all the junk that's out there now.
Yeah,
no, but you're right. I would do it. I would do it in a heartbeat. I think that's one of those things that those of us of a certain generation that, you know, did have Star Trek and Star Wars and all that. But on the flip side, we saw a man land on the moon. We saw, you know, the development of the space program. I mean, you know, that's just something I think that has always been in the back of our minds of, wouldn't it be cool? And only in the last couple of years, it's turning into, that would be cool.
That's right.
So yeah. I'm totally on board.
Yeah.
Beam me up.
I'm going to wait for them to start getting those trips where you go up there and you do a couple, you know, two or three orbits. I don't just want to go, oh, I'm technically in outer space and now I'm coming back down again. I want to wait for the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. I want the space station.
That'd be cool. All right. Moving on to our top dog, the penultimate picks for both of our lists. This is
number one.
My number one was declared a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1983. I'm guessing it's the only location on either one of our lists that has free roaming llamas. It has incredible architecture. It has history. It's got scenery, unique flora, unique fauna. It's a place that you'll feel like you're discovering something for the very first time when you step into the sacred grounds. And I'm talking about hiking to the top of Machu Picchu in Peru. Not taking the train. This bucket list item is a challenge and a reward. It's a 4-day trip up. It is the holy grail of backpackers everywhere. And it is one of those places that you'll never, ever stop telling people that you visited once you've gone there. People are going to get really tired of you saying, hey, you know, when we were in Machu Picchu. Another thing that's kind of pushing this a little higher for me, too, is visitation to this area is starting to be curbed a little bit. So the opportunity might not exist as freely as it has in the past, just because too many bodies up there, too many things are happening. The site is getting spoiled to a certain point. So when you start limiting visitation, you've got this extraordinary destination to get to. It just makes it a little bit more of that brass ring. It's still a mystery as to what Machu Picchu was. Some say it was a university. Some say it was a palace, grand palace for an Incan leader. Regardless, it is a remarkable snapshot into not ancient history, recent history, 500 years. But when you combine that with the adventure of the hike, the destination, getting back, it really is. My cousins went on this trip and they said it was absolutely incredible, worthy of the number one spot. So I'm just going to stop there. And that is hiking to the top of Machu Picchu in Peru. Number one.
Very nice. Oh, hiking and climbing boy. And you know what? Until they discover exactly and figure out exactly what it was, I'm not going. I'm kidding. Damn llamas.
Llama.
Very nice. All right. My number one, since I kind of get hooked on this whole beginning of civilization and Western culture and everything, I'm starting with the true cradle of the modern Western world, and that's the entire dang country of Italy. It's a must-see for people. If you've not been there, you just got to go. It's steeped in history from the mighty Roman Empire all the way through to today. Italy's mark on art, culture, language, cuisine, science, fashion, architecture, and so much more. It's just undeniable. You've got the ruins of Pompeii, which we mentioned a little earlier in the show, Mount Vesuvius, the Isle of Capri. But Rome is really the target of where you want to go, obviously, with its restaurants, cafes, shops, and great pieces of historical significance like the Colosseum, the Trevi Fountain, the Appian Way, the Spanish Steps, the Pantheon, the Roman Forum, and all the cathedrals, museums, Vatican City with the Sistine Chapel. And then up the ways, there's the Amalfi Coast with beautiful Cinque Terre and all the other little villages built there on the cliffs going down to the sea. You have Tuscany, featuring Florence and their Uffizi Gallery, the Statue of David, the Duomo, the Piazza Michelangelo, Basilica of Santa Croce, the Palazzo and Ponte Vecchio. Just amazing museums, amazing food, wineries, walled towns, Pisa with its leaning towers there in Tuscany. And then, of course, Venice, the canals and gondolas, the Doge's Palace, the Piazza San Marco and Basilica there, glass blowing, mask makers, the Ponte di Rialto Bridge, the Carnival of Venice, one of the great festivals of the world. And in the north, you have Milan and Lake Como and going up into Switzerland and Austria and the Alps. And it's beautiful. It's steeped in culture and history. There is so much to do. You could spend a lifetime there. And I hope to spend a couple months there very soon. It's Italy.
All right. Come on, Italy? I mean, that's just... Come on. That's like 20 destinations in one answer. Earth. I gave you space.
That's
space,
right, baby.
You know, space could be Jupiter or Mars. It could be the Milky Way. It could be anything. But, I mean, Italy. Yeah. I mean, it's a great choice. Don't get me wrong. I didn't have anything from Italy on mine. I wanted to find one, but I was looking for specific things, not this broad general thing. But, you know, you do you.
I will do. It's a life changer. You go spend time in Italy. Hey, It's not that big.
You get the boot.
Florida and the Carolinas, they can take it on.
Great. So you go to Pinehurst 12 times.
Let's talk about taking on in a fight. All right. Good list. Interesting takes. Which brings us to
Unlisted, the sequel.
And in our Unlisted, the sequel, of course, is a time where we give some shout outs, some honorable mentions to things that weren't mentioned before. What are some of the honorable mentions for you?
One honorable mention. I mean, I'm going to put space on that list now because that was a great answer. you mentioned the Southern Lights. I was toying with the idea of going to Iceland to see the Northern Lights. I think that it's one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
Yeah.
I think it'd be absolutely awesome. The Forbidden City in China would be fascinating to see, you know, rather than, but that is a very singular destination as opposed to something a little broader, which is what I was kind of trying to find the balance on.
You can't go there. It's forbidden.
The palace comp, the Forbidden City is forbidden, but the complex around it is not. And you know, and there's other kind of just, I'm not going to say generic, but more general things like seeing the cherry blossoms in Japan, you know, going to the Galapagos, going to Niagara Falls. I mean, there's just so many wonderful singular things that you could do. I think we both chose things where you would be occupied for more than a day or two, that you, there's a lot to explore and experience under the umbrella of the destination that we were choosing.
Mm-hmm. All good choices. Machu Picchu was on mine as well. Iguazu Falls, which is where Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay come together, would be amazing. The Victoria Falls are bigger, but they're kind of just in a straight line. The Iguazu Falls are kind of in, there are 200 different falls all put together, kind of in a crescent shaped valley. And depending on the lighting conditions and if it's a full moon, there's all different experiences you can get there. It's supposed to be amazing. Havana, Cuba, I think would be a fascinating place to go to with its buildings and the colorful buildings that have kind of stayed back in time and the old American classic cars that were purchased there, you know, from the 40s through the early 60s. The Northern Lights was on mine as well. Whether it's Iceland or Norway or Sweden, there's a lot of different opportunities. There's a lot of igloo hotels there that you can sleep, and it's glass igloo, and you can see the Northern Lights as you're falling asleep. And also some of the ice hotels that are there. I think that'd be fascinating to see, you know, and go be in an ice hotel where the rooms are made of ice, the bar is out of ice, they serve the drinks in glasses of ice. Oktoberfest, I think, would be an amazing thing to see in Munich.
That would be a lot of fun. That would be a lot of fun. You know, one I think we both maybe missed on, unless you're going to just list it, is I think about it, just taking a sailboat around the Caribbean.
Yeah, that would be great. Certain festivals also, because I just mentioned Oktoberfest, but also the St. Patrick's Festival in Dublin, Ireland is supposed to be amazing. The Day of the Dead festival, almost anywhere in Mexico, but you got to think Mexico City throws a good party on that day.
Yes.
That's got to be an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And then the last thing on my list is the city/country of the same name of Dubai.
Yeah.
It's one of the most modern cities in the world and has certain things, tourist attractions that are not found anywhere else. So I
think and the world's tallest building.
Big piece of curiosity. Yeah. And the world's only 7-star hotel.
Ooh.
Amazing stuff.
Ooh. Man, those are all great. And again, I think it's one of those lists you can't go wrong. You know, there's no right or wrong way to put together a bucket list. And I think we both came up with some amazing choices. Speaking of bucket lists, I'm going to blindside you here.
Blindside.
Uh-oh. Yep.
So we've been talking about bucket list destinations, but what is just on your bucket list? Not necessarily places to go, but maybe things to do.
Wow.
Or, you know, we can even expand it a little bit. You know, are there some things you've done that you checked off your bucket list? So you can make it a combination of, you know, give me a couple of each.
I'm horrible at this stuff. My brain just doesn't work in that way. And I don't know if it's a thing that I don't want to set myself up for disappointment, you know, that, oh, I didn't get to do that or something, or I don't know.
For me, I've accomplished a couple things. You know, I fell in love,
yeah,
which honestly, you know, that's something I crossed my mind. I never thought would happen. And I have fallen, you know, hopelessly, helplessly in love. So I can check that off my bucket list. And, you know, I had a pretty decent role in a major movie. I never thought that would happen. I mean, that's a complete and total bucket list item. And then throw in a couple of the other things that I've done. I never thought I'd have an acting career of any size, mm-hmm. you know, in Hollywood. So that's an absolute bucket list item. What else do I want to do? I want to finish school. Mm. You know, I got close. I got so close and then just ended up, you know, getting on such a role at Universal that I just never went back. And I'm exploring it now. I'm actually hopefully going to be starting in the fall of 2022 to finish up my few classes to get my degree. So that's on my bucket list. And I want to see Cal in the Rose Bowl. That is on my bucket list.
I thought you were going to keep it realistic, dude. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Hey, dare to dream, man. Dare to dream.
Well, the citizens of Utah will be able to tell you right now, it's possible, baby. It's possible. that's very well said. Bucket list for me is, you know, I got to have a career that was somewhat in the realm of what I initially wanted to do from the days of junior high and high school. So, that feels very good. I think I would also like to create something, whether it's a performing arts complex, you know, or a television series of my own, something like that, or a play or whatever. I would like to create something like that. This podcast in a much smaller little scale, you know, goes along on that line a little bit. It's fun, but,
Well, I think that whet both of our appetites.
Yeah. You know, and I have the family thing that I don't do a lot of preset images, but, you know, I've got fantastic, amazing wife, two great, healthy, fantastic boys. We've had a couple great dogs who love the area that we're in. But a lot of the other things is what we talked about today. I want to travel. I want to go see some of these different things. So, you know,
right.
A lot about what we've been talking about today would be on the bucket list, I guess.
Good.
Especially space.
I want to float.
Elon Musk.
Dude, if you ever go, you have to wear an outfit of some kind. It's got to be a Starfleet outfit or something.
Well, I think you have to, or you die.
Pretty much.
I mean, something other than that.
I want a full-on Star Trek nerd T-shirt. Something.
You know what? I'm not wearing one of the red shirts from Star Trek, though. I'm a little smarter than that.
Fair point. Nice. God, this conversation has really gotten me to the point where, you know, to what you were just saying, I just want to get out there and see some stuff. You know, it's hard to believe we didn't pick more things here in the United States, because we could still do a whole other episode on, you know, United States bucket list things, seeing Yosemite, seeing the Everglades, seeing Yellowstone, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Space Needle, you know, the list goes on and on.
Yeah. The Grand Canyon, Glacier Bay in Alaska, you know, there are a lot of things that were under consideration for sure.
Yeah.
And the Grand Canyon is actually the thing that came the closest to me, because really that is something that you could tell somebody from other parts of the world going, yeah, that's kind of a jaw dropper. You kind of get to see that.
Yeah. But, you don't see that in a whole lot of other places in the world.
Exactly. But great call on the writing, the Orient Express. I love that one. And, if I win the lottery, then you and me, dude. We're on that train.
Done. Well, we got to bring Jill and Sean too. I mean,
if they are well behaved, we will consider it.
It's been fun doing the show with you, Steve.
You know what? They know I'm joking. They know I'm not that brave. So, but it made for good radio.
You also have the editing skills, so you can always go to that card, too.
I'll leave this in. I like to live dangerously.
Hey, Steve, what happened to that line? I thought I said that line.
every trip is better with Sean. So of course she's going, and I would assume that every trip is better with Jill. So yeah, we can do that. That would be fun.
Yes. All of the
Double
above
the fun.
All of the above.
And you and I've got a, we have a couple of trips that we need to click off. If not this year, at least by the end of 23. But
I think absolutely. I think we're all in on that. We got some good stuff ahead of us, my friend.
Absolutely. Well, good episode, good list, good stuff. No guest today, but we will have a guest in the near future. Keep you honest, keep you guessing what's happening here. But the next episode, we move back into the world of sports with the greatest individual Olympic performances. So no team accomplishments, but rather focusing on the individual athletes. And I guess you could pick an athlete who was a part of a team in the Olympics, but it's their individual performance as opposed to what the team accomplished. Should be fun to break down. So make sure you guys download this one.
Time to go for the gold. Hey, everyone, you can find Populist on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, Google, iHeartRadio, Pandora, or wherever you go to get your quality podcasts. And remember, we are a member of the Buzzsprout community, and Populist is a Vintage Year production.
That's right. And wherever you do listen to us, we'd be forever grateful if you'd give us a 5-star rating and a positive review. Those kind of things go a long way to help us grow the show by expanding our listener base. You can find us on Buzzsprout.
If you do, there'll be cake.
Ooh, cake. You can find us on Buzzsprout at populist.buzzsprout.com, on facebook.com/populistpod, and on Twitter at populist_pod. Those social media sites will just help you keep up with what's going on with the pod, what's coming up next, when new shows are released, and all that good stuff. All right, dude. Good job. Fun talking bucket list destinations with you.
Nice job. That was fun. Time to go back to the Atlas and start looking at places.
Yeah, exactly. Looking forward to next week. There's a couple guys that, you know, people, guys and girls that jump to my head right away, but it'll be interesting once I start digging deeper, whether they stay, they go, where they, what positions they take on the list.
Oh yeah.
What about you?
You know, it's hard not, again, not to go back to my childhood and look at some of the performances that I remember, because these larger than life heroes stood out. You know, I don't think I'm giving anything away, but you know, the Eric Heidens of the world, or the Mark Spitzes of the world, or the Mary Lou Retton's, or the Nadia Comaneci's. I mean, these are all just really, so my homework's going to have to be in the last 20 years where I didn't pay quite as much attention to the Olympic Games, and just make sure I'm not missing anything that was like, holy crow. I mean, a lot of good stuff out there. And I want to make sure that I'm getting outside of the United States.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to follow our athletes, and I want to make sure I'm not missing, you know, somebody around the world who didn't do something just unbelievably impressive. So this should be a lot of fun to research.
Yeah. And for sure. And I will guarantee that my top 10 will not be just all people who have broken Olympic records and whatever, that there's going to be some things, or the guys that were the unexpected guys, the underdogs, the something that pulled the rabbit out of the hat, so to speak. It'll be fun to put together. And
yeah. And for me, it's not all about medal count either.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that does it for us. We look forward to doing it again very soon. And thank you, each and every one of you, for tuning us in, downloading, and listening to the nonsense that Kirk and I do. We love doing it for you and hope you're having fun as well. So until next time,
go check something off your bucket list, everybody. Stay safe.
That's right. Good. Bye-bye.
See ya.